and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is Southwest Health Unveils Expansion by Grace Neeland. Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. A regional healthcare provider is planning a multi-million dollar expansion at its Platteville campus. Southwest Health this week announced plans to construct a new outpatient building near its Platteville Hospital. The building is expected to house several services currently offered at the hospital to free up space in the hospital for a planned internal remodel. We've been blessed with some pretty aggressive growth, and the result is that we're simply out of space at the hospital, said Southwest Health Chief Ancillary Services Officer Corey Schmidt. Moving some of those services to the new building clears up a ton of space for other uses. Preliminary costs for the entire project range from $20 million to $25 million. The design of the outpatient building is not yet finalized, but early estimates put it at nearly 20,000 square feet. The new outpatient building on East Side Road will hold Southwest Health Behavioral Services, the Eye Center, and several other services currently housed in the main hospital. The move is expected to take place in 2026 once the building is complete. Southwest Health CEO Dan Rohrbach said the move will be particularly beneficial for the Behavioral Services Department, which offers outpatient mental health care. Demand for such services has surged in recent years, Rohrbach said, and the department is maxed out in its current space. Mental health is a growing need, he said. We see that here locally, but it's true nationwide. If we want to continue to offer additional services to the community, we have to expand that space, which causes kind of a domino effect. Rohrbach added that no service disruptions are expected during the construction. After the various services move to the new building, the space left behind in the hospital will be retrofitted to build three additional operating rooms and other useful spaces. That will bring the hospital to seven operating rooms. We see this as a continuation of our natural growth, Rohrbach said. We expect to see staffing grow as we work to provide more services for the community. Internal remodeling of the hospital space is expected to take an additional year and will be completed by 2027, Rohrbach said. As the hospital grows to fill that space, officials expect to hire more staff. Southwest Health employs over 600 people across its hospital and various satellite clinics throughout the Southwest Wisconsin. Platteville Regional Chamber Executive Director Wayne Woodars applauded the news of the impending expansion, noting the hospital's growth in the past 10 years is nothing short of amazing. It just shows that we're in an area that has the demand and the need for those additional services, Wooders said. We're getting their message out there. It's really helped people become aware of everything they have to offer. The new building will be constructed on land adjacent to the hospital and will be accessed from the same parking lot. The project is separate from ongoing development of 27 acres near the hospital that Southwest Health plans to sell to area businesses. Updates on the project and future Southwest Health Services expansions will be posted online at southwesthealth.org. The next story is titled, Iowa Legislators Position Parties for November, by Benjamin Fisher. Republicans in the Iowa House of Representatives this week advanced a package of major election reforms as the national politics of a presidential election year continue to be reflected in the state legislature. With state and federal elections in November, the Iowa legislature has been breaking with what area political experts say are historical trends by taking up less controversial legislation in election years, with the Republican majority not only pressing forward with recent years' conservative agenda, but also advancing bills to take that agenda further. Meanwhile, Republicans in the legislature's two chambers have united under a shared policy platform aimed at contrasting themselves with the majority party ahead of Election Day. The Iowa House this week passed a package of election reforms that would, among other things, ban the removal of federal candidates from Iowa ballots unless the candidate in question failed to meet simple procedural candidacy qualifications. The provision comes after several states, including Colorado and Illinois, sought to remove former President Donald Trump from the ballot, but those moves were struck down unanimously in the U.S. Supreme Court. The bill also would place additional limitations on mail-in voting, require absentee ballots to be received by the end of the day before Election Day, and ban ballot drop boxes and ranked choice voting. After a request from many county auditors, bill sponsor Iowa Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican of Wilton, amended the bill to make these election reforms not apply until 2025. The bill passed along party lines with Republicans supporting it and Democrats opposing. Anytime we can strengthen our election integrity law, it's a good day, Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, Republican of Piasta, told the Telegraph Herald in a message after she supported the bill. The proposed reforms would change elections in Iowa for the third consecutive election cycle. Clayton County Auditor Jennifer Garm said the bill's requirement that absentee ballots be received and filed by county election officials by 5 p.m. the day before Election Day would be harder on voters and election officials, even if the bill also extends the first day officials can mail absentee ballots from 20 days before Election Day to 22 days. Auditors, on Mondays before election, we are preparing for Election Day. We are going to polling places to set up equipment, she said. Adding having to collect and count ballots on that of all days is a lot. It seems like someone has to be elsewhere unexpectedly when they should mail their ballot, and they should be able to still vote with it on Election Day. Democrats on the House floor said both the mail-in and drop-box restrictions would impose more barriers on voters with mobility issues, those who work shifts on Election Day, and others. Kaufman called such claims of voter suppression a myth. Iowa Representative Amy Nielsen, Democrat of North Liberty, offered an amendment on behalf of her party this week with measures including automatic voter registration, a 45-day ballot mail-out window, early absentee ballot counting for faster Election Day results, and fewer restrictions on drop boxes. It failed along party lines. In addition to politicking over elections themselves, the legislature also has pursued several bills this session connected to national political debates. Those include defining man and woman based on the gender assigned at a person's birth, defining an unborn person starting at conception, and banning the hiring of people who cannot provide documentation that they are authorized to work in the U.S. Political science professors Chris Budzids of Loras College in Dubuque and Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa said state legislatures, including Iowa's, typically have tended to stick to basic governance policy in election years and avoid controversial issues. But they said this legislature's majority seems to have abandoned that tradition. It's a function of having the substantial majority, I think, Budzid says. When you're thinking about why election year legislatures tended to be low output and typically would avoid flashpoint issues, that was they wanted to be safe and they wanted to be quick so incumbents could campaign. But the advantage of being safe or quick is relative when you have a majority like this. Larimer said the shift could also be one in tactics, focusing more on enthusiasm of the party base than on broad appeal. Because elections are increasingly about mobilizing your own supporters or base, it may be that these issues can mobilize their base, he said. The legislature's Democrats also are breaking with traditions, experts said, with a united platform under the banner People Over Politics. The lawmakers in both chambers' minorities have introduced a slate of legislation aimed at lowering costs and raising wages, encoding reproductive rights for women, and expanding job and retirement security, among others. The idea is coordination, Budzid says. because when you're trying to counter an agenda from a larger majority, it makes sense to have a more cohesive message. Maybe they see that as a way to recruit candidates too. Iowa Senate Minority Leader Pam Jockum, Democrat of Dubuque, said she intended to be a campaign banner this year. "We are proposing actual solutions to problems we know Iowans are facing, while the other party is playing politics and focusing on special interests and their national party," she said. "Absolutely, we're going to run on it." Dubuque County GOP Chairman John Dara, though, said he was encouraged by Republican lawmakers' moves. "As a Republican, I'm happy that they are pushing what I think are all conservative Republican types of programs and ideas. I have not seen anything that I thought was pushing the envelope too far as being a hindrance to electability for Republicans going forward." The last story from the front page is Police Update, Successes and Challenges by Andy Piper. Technology and Community. Dubuque Police Chief Jeremy Jensen emphasized those two factors as he presented the Dubuque City Council with the department's annual report for 2023 this week. "Working together," he said, "is what makes policing work in the city. Number one, we have a safe community," Jensen said, as he pointed to the department's crime resolution statistics. In 2023, Dubuque Police reached a resolution to 77% of all crimes against persons, while the national average for 2022, the most current on record via FBI data, was 37%. The department resolved 92% of crimes against property, a much higher rate than the national average of 12%. He said the city's extensive camera network is the critical element in achieving those numbers, though not all resolved cases end in an arrest. "We have really good officers who are using the technology," Jensen said. "You can see that through our clearance rates. We can suspend cases, which you don't see in the national statistics, with pretty good accuracy. We can take cases as far as we can run them, and the cameras give us a pretty good, accurate idea of what's going on. A lot of other towns are envious of that, and our officers are leveraging that to do some really good work. As we look to the future, we look to leverage technology." Jensen also highlighted the impact brain health is having on policing. The department's critical incident team uses a secondary responder model, providing a second trained individual to aid first responders when a person is experiencing brain health or substance abuse issues. From 2016 through 2020, brain health calls averaged 451 per year. They have steadily increased since then, reaching a high in 2023 of 766. "Law enforcement entered into this field, and it's not going away," Jensen said. "There are a lot of components, and we need to work with a lot of partners to make it better than it is." Jensen also highlighted the role of the department's community-oriented policing strategy, which is built around working directly with residents to build relationships. Dubuque's school resource officers are a part of the community policing philosophy. "They are the ones who you see in the neighborhoods, and they are the ones in the schools," Jensen said. "They are a key component because they are the ones looking for the long-term solutions to many of the issues we are dealing with. Community policing isn't valuable unless it's a community partnership. That's the only way to make it work." Council member Susan Farber shared a conversation she had with a citizen that she said illustrates the community policing model. Farber said the resident had reached out to officers to inform them about a noise issue in his neighborhood. He also included a video to better educate officers about his complaints. "One of the comments that one of your officers made in writing was how appreciative he was of the fact that this resident would reach out and actually give them a video and have a conversation about noise in the neighborhood that they probably weren't aware of," Farber said. Councilmember Rick Jones praised the department for its handling of a seven-hour standoff Monday that ended peacefully with an arrest. "That's tough, and it's not necessarily typical," Jones said. "A lot of agencies can't wait to kick the door and see what comes next. I'm proud you're not one of them. I describe it to people as policing with a conscience, and your conscience is showing that compassion is shown even to the bad guys, who some people don't think are worthy of it, and the care taken to cause the least amount of harm when harm has to happen. The department recorded 199 use of force incidents involving officers in 2023. The 10-year average is 219 per year, with a high of 246 in 2015. Police use of force was used in 7% of all arrests in 2023. Of all the cases in which officers believed a taser was needed, law enforcement deployed the implement 12% of the time. The other 88% of incidents resulted in officers not needing to fire the weapon. There were 7 confirmed shots fired with criminal intent cases in 2023. The 5-year average for Dubuque is 16, with a high of 28 in 2021. Jensen said a Dubuque police officer is assigned to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Task Force and investigated 30 federal firearms violations that led to 23 arrests in 2023. The Dubuque Drug Task Force handled 323 investigations in 2023. Of those, 29 were drug overdose investigations and 7 were opioid death investigations. Fentanyl was present in all 7 opioid deaths. Jensen noted that over the past 20 years, methamphetamine had been the top focus for law enforcement, but there were no methamphetamine-related investigations in 2023. Now we turn to page 2, the Dubuque and Tri-State page, and this first article at the top of the page. Area Iowa Democrats go for Biden with low overall turnout for the mail-in process, by Benjamin Fisher. East Central Iowa participants in the Democratic Party's reimagined mail-in caucuses broadly supported incumbent President Joe Biden, though Democrats' participation in the process this year was generally lower statewide than in past cycles. After the Democratic National Committee jettisoned the Iowa caucuses first in the nation's standing, the Iowa Democratic Party adopted a mail-in balloting process to distribute delegates to primary candidates. Part of the state's party's deal with their national counterpart was that while Democrats technically caucused for party business alongside Republicans on January 15th, their presidential preference results would not be released until Super Tuesday this week. Statewide, 12,207 registered Democrats returned mail-in ballots through the new process, which was fewer than in 2012, the last presidential election with an incumbent Democrat. In both statewide and area counties, Clayton, Delaware, Dubuque, and Jackson, Biden received a landslide victory over primary challengers. Numbers released by the IDP on Tuesday night are considered unofficial, since the party will count ballots postmarked by end of day Monday. Official results are expected Friday, March 8th. Of the registered Democrats who requested presidential preference cards by mail this year, 391 from Dubuque County returned their ballots, as did 61 from Jackson County, 46 from Clayton County, and 40 from Delaware County. County-level participation numbers from 2012, to which the IDP has compared participation this year, are not public, and the IDP did not provide them when asked by the Telegraph Herald. Dubuque County Democrats Chairman Matt Robinson, though, said the 391 votes in his county actually beat local numbers from 2012. "I was impressed by the results that we saw," he said on Wednesday. "We had 389 in 2012. That, to me, shows that we did what we set out to do, make the presidential preference process more accessible for Democrats, especially those who work late shifts or struggle with accessibility, or participate by mail for any other reason." "Absolutely dismal," he said of the turnout. Clayton County Democrats Chairman Bryman Brooming said, criticizing the state's party new process as a reason for low turnout in his county. "By making the process more arcane, more complicated, with too many steps, the process was doomed from the start." In Dubuque County, 349, or 89% of ballots, went for Biden. Biden received 52 votes, or 85%, in Jackson County, 42, or 91%, in Clayton County, and 36, or 90%, in Delaware County. U.S. Representative Dean Phillips, Democrat of Minnetonka, said second-time candidate Marianne Williamson received anywhere from 0 to 6.6% of support across each tri-state county. Some voters, between 3% and 7.5% in each area county, returned their presidential preference cards but marked uncommitted. Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman, who stood with the Iowa Democratic Party's initial opposition to the DNC's change before the state party adapted to the national party's demands, said Wednesday that the results proved his point. The Democrat enthusiasm for their newfangled mail-in caucus was pathetic, almost as pathetic as their election losses in November will be, he said in a press. And then the next story is Dubuque teen, originally facing murder, robbery charges, pleads to lesser offense, gets 2 years probation, by Grace Nealon. A Dubuque teen has been sentenced to 2 years of probation after pleading guilty to a lesser charge in relation to a fatal 2023 shooting. Tiara D. Godwin, 17, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zrinal Ackley after pleading guilty to a charge of accessory after the fact and aggravated misdemeanor. Godwin initially was charged in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with first-degree murder and first-degree robbery in the shooting death of Lonnie E. Burns, 31, of Dubuque. Police found an unresponsive Burns outside his Romberg Avenue residence with several gunshot wounds on February 7, 2023, and he later was pronounced dead. Court documents state that Godwin was at Burns's residence as a part of a group there to rob Burns of drugs and money they believed to be in his home. Dubuque traffic cameras footage shows the group arriving at Burns' residence at about 12:40 a.m. February 7, 2023. Footage shows Burns engaging with the group before a short physical altercation ensues. Aaron C. Johnson, 25, of Chicago, raises a gun and shots are fired in Burns' direction. A jury last year found Johnson guilty of first-degree murder and first-degree robbery in Burns' death. He recently appealed that decision to the Iowa Supreme Court. Also charged in connection with the incident were Jermaine Bolds, 31, Kenneth Reed, 28, and Terry Valerie, 29. Bolds, in February, pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to 50 years in prison. Reed and Valerie are charged with first-degree robbery and first-degree murder, and their cases are ongoing. Godwin testified to her involvement in their incident during Johnson's trial. She told jurors that Bowl told her to set up a meeting with Burns that night under the pretense that she, then 16, would trade sexual favors for money or drugs. Godwin said the plan was for Burns to open the door for her, at which point the rest of the group would push through and rob him. She said they arrived at the house early February 7th, however, and she entered alone before the group knocked on the door soon after and told Burns to let her out. Burns ushered her out of the side door of his home, Godwin testified, and she returned to the group. They were all kind of talking over each other, she said at Johnson's trial. Then, maybe a minute or two later, I heard gunshots. I just kind of froze. It scared me, but then the group ran past me, and Jermaine told me to run. Dubuque County Attorney Scott Nelson said this week that Godwin's sentencing marked another step toward closure and justice for Burns' family. He said he also hopes to wrap up the Valerie and Reed cases soon. Nelson said Godwin received the lesser charge of accessory after the fact because of her age, her assistance at Johnson's trial, and her low level of culpability in Burns' death compared to other defendants. It's all about culpability, he said. Ms. Godwin was not a major player in this crime. She just got sucked along with it, We expect she's learned a lot from this and will start thinking a lot more about getting involved in certain things again. Now we turn to the news in brief column. Police. Suspect in 2022 fraudulent check cashing scheme faces new charges. Police said a man arrested in 2022 for his role in a fraudulent check cashing scheme in Dubuque faces new charges related to the case. Travion H. Reese, 29, of Atlanta, was arrested at 10 p.m. Monday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on charges of first-degree theft, forgery, conspiracy to commit a non-forcible felony, and ongoing criminal conduct. Court documents state that Reese, Jada N. Johnson, 20, of Decatur, Georgia, and other individuals were engaged in a counterfeit check-cashing scheme in November 22 in Dubuque. Those running the scheme said people paid people to cash fraudulent checks at local banks, documents state. Johnson was sentenced in May to 2 to 5 years of probation in relation to the scheme. Previous state-level charges against Reese related to the case were dismissed in February 2023 in favor of a federal investigation into the case, document. Eastern Iowa Irish Band to perform at annual Dyersville Dinner. Dateline Dyersville. An Eastern Iowa Irish Band will perform this weekend in Dyersville. Blame Not the Bard will perform at the 19th Annual Ancient Order of Hibernians Dinner, Saturday, March 9th, at the Knights of Columbus Hall, 111 3rd Street Northeast. The dinner begins at 6 p.m. Blame Not the Bard takes the stage at 8 p.m. Blame Not the Bard includes members from Cedar Rapids and Iowa City and consists of Corey Baker on guitar, percussion, and vocals, Andrew Philbrick on tenor banjo, bass guitar, and vocals, Nicole Philbrick on fiddle, mandolin, and vocals, and Dan Vaughn on whistle, flute, and guitar. Tickets are $40 in advance and available at English Insurance Agency, 129 First Avenue East. Raffle tickets for the trip to Ireland are sold separately, while the raffle drawing is scheduled for 9 p.m. Proceeds from the evening will benefit local and national charities. Officials warn of housing voucher waiting list scam. Dubuque officials warn of a scam involving waiting lists for income-eligible rental assistance. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has reported incidents in which scammers target individuals seeking access to housing choice voucher waiting lists across the country, according to a press release issued by the City of Dubuque. The release states that the scam involves an unauthorized group falsely promising shortcuts to the waiting lists. Dubuque's voucher waiting list only opens the second Tuesday of each month, and the link is only available at cityofdubuque.org/hcv. There are never any fees associated with applying for a voucher waiting list, and applicants are notified of placement on the list by official letters from Dubuque's Housing and Community Development Department. Residents suspecting a scam should email housing@cityofdubuque.org and contact law enforcement. And then the police column. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported the following. Paige M. Boland, 20, of 2605 Cheney Road, was arrested at 5:40 a.m. Wednesday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging first-degree harassment. Brian L. Riley, 36, of 709 1/2 University Avenue, was arrested at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday in the 2300 block of Radford Road on warrants charging stalking and unauthorized placement of a GPS device and 3 counts of violation of a no-contact order. Samuel Akins, Jr., 53, of 2420 Central Avenue, was arrested at 1:24 p.m. Tuesday in the 2400 block of Windsor Avenue on warrants charging voluntary absence from custody and 2 counts of probation violation. Court documents state that Akins did not return to the state correctional facility at 1494 Elm Street on February 1st. Christopher T. Hittenmiller, 34, of 749 Robert Street, was arrested at 4:09 a.m. Tuesday in the 700 block of Alta Vista Street on charges of obstruction of emergency communication, two counts of interference with official acts, and three counts of domestic assault with injury. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, March 7th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Next, we'll turn to today's obituaries. Wayne Lewis. Wayne T. Lewis, 81, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, March 5, 2024, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Visitation will be from 2 p.m. until 3:15 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, at Hoffman, Schneider, and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. The funeral service for Wayne will be at 3:30 p.m. Saturday, March 9, 2024, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, with Pastor Robert Harbin officiating. Full military honors will be rendered by the American Legion Post No. 6 and the Iowa Army National Guard. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery in Dubuque at a later date. Robert W. Balk. Robert Bob, or R.W., William Balk, 66, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away at home on Saturday, March 2, 2024, surrounded by his family. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, March 9, 2024, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, with the service to be at 1 p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to the Robert W. Balk Memorial Fund. Thomas V. Zenz, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Thomas V. Zenz, 84, of Lancaster, died on Monday, March 4, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 8, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 9, at St. Clement Catholic Church in Lancaster, where a mass of Christian burial will follow. Burial will take place in the church cemetery. Timothy A. Goodney, Platteville, Wisconsin. Timothy A. Goodney, 60, of Platteville, died on Tuesday, March 5, 2024. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 8, at Platteville Free Methodist Church, where services will follow. Burial will take place in Harrison Cemetery in Platteville. Melby Funeral Home and Crematory of Platteville is assisting the family. Roger Cox. Roger Cox, 65, of Dubuque, died on Wednesday, March 6, 2024. Arrangements are pending. Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, is assisting the family. Peter F. Durney, Soldiers Grove, Wisconsin. Peter F. Durney, 57, of Soldiers Grove and formerly of Lancaster, died on Saturday, March 2, 2024. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory of Lancaster is assisting the family. James J. Hoyne. James J. Jim Hoyne, 57, of Dubuque, died on Saturday, March 2, 2024. Private services were held, and entombment will take place in Mount Calvary Cemetery Mausoleum. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting Jim's family. Mary Jane Stotler. Mary Jane Stotler, 88, of Dubuque, died on Tuesday, March 5, 2024. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. Monday, March 11th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where services will follow. Betty D. Huseman. Betty D. Huseman, 84, of Dubuque, died on Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. Private services will be held. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting. And in funeral services, Rachel Bartle of Dubuque, celebration of life, 1 to 6 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, Oxus Grotto. Shirley A. Chapman, Dubuque, parish wake service, noon, Saturday, March 10th, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Visitation noon to 3 p.m. Sunday at the funeral home. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Monday, March 11th, at St. Raphael Cathedral. Harold E. Daniels, Dubuque. Visitation 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 9th, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. Service at 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Aileen Drischel, Dubuque. Memorial service 10 a.m. Friday, March 8th, Hope Church. Jack A. Edens, Galena, Illinois. Visitation noon to 3 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, Crossroads Community Church, Galena. James Faulkner, Cassville, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life, 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, J&J Sandbar, 1110 East Amelia Street, Henry Goldstein, Dubuque. Service, 11 a.m. Saturday, March 9th, First Baptist Church. Josephine W. Green, Dubuque. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 9th, Summit Congregational United Church of Christ. Service, 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Richard A. Hannig, Piasta, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 8th, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Diane K. Henry, Maquoketa, Iowa. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, March 8th, Carson Celebration of Life Center, Maquoketa. Celebration of Life, 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home. James L. Hirsch, Dubuque. Wake service, 3:45 p.m. today, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today at the funeral home, and from 9 to 10 a.m. Friday, March 8th, Sacred Heart Catholic Church, Massive Christian Burial, 10 a.m. Friday at the church. Margaret John, East Dubuque, Illinois. Visitation, 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. today, St. Mary's Church, East Dubuque. Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today at the church. Mary Lou Kulpinski, Shellsburg, Wisconsin. Visitation, 10 to 11. Visitation, 9 to 11:45 a.m. today, St. Patrick's Catholic, Benton, Wisconsin. Massive Christian Burial, noon today at the church. Eileen Leland, Dubuque. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 9th, St. Luke's United Methodist Church. Service, 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Diane M. Lucas, Holy Cross, Iowa. Visitation, 2 to 7 p.m. Monday, March 11th, and from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, March 12th, Kramer Funeral Home, Holy Cross. Service, 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at Holy Cross Catholic Church. Harold R. McMillan, Jr., Guttenberg, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 8th, St. John's Lutheran Church, Guttenberg. Service, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 9th at the church. Mary A. Montag, Dyersville, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 5 p.m. Friday, March 8th, Denny's Lux Club, 3050 Asbury Road. Neil E. Ransford, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, March 16th, St. John's Lutheran Church. Service, 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Rochelle M. Rees-Ernzen, Asbury, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 8 p.m. today, Rife Funeral Home, Piasta, and at 10 a.m. Friday, March 8th, St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Service, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Larry D. Riley, Dubuque. Celebration of Life, 4 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena, Illinois. Joseph L. Wachtel, Wausau, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life, noon, Saturday, March 9th, Sundown Mountain Resort, South Lodge. And Jacob A. Young, Dubuque. Visitation, 1 to 6 p.m., Sunday, March 10th, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. Service, 10:30 a.m., Monday, March 11th, at the funeral home. Now we'll turn to sports, and the article at the top of the page is Marquette wins semifinal on late shot. In boys prep basketball, Bellevue Marquette 59, Lake Mills 57 in Iowa Class 1A state semifinals by Danny Miller. Dateline Des Moines. Heartbreak wasn't in the cards this time. Cannon still wasn't about to let it happen 2 years in a row. Still, a senior point guard shimmied his way through the defense, stopped on a dime, and buried a step-back jumper with 6 seconds remaining to send Bellevue Marquette Catholic past Lake Mills 59-57 in a Class 1A state semifinal contest on Wednesday at Wells Fargo Arena. We were just trying to get open as a team, and the shot clock was running, so I knew I had to take the shot, Still said. I practiced that shot quite a bit in practice, so I put it up there. It felt good out of my hand, and I'm just so happy it went in. Steele's game-winning jumper helped the defenders avoid a gut-wrenching postseason loss for the second straight season. Last year, Marquette fell just shy of reaching the state tournament, suffering a one-point loss in the sub-state finals. Instead, Steele's heroics lined up a dream rematch with top-ranked North Lynn. Second-seeded Marquette will face top-seeded North Lynn on Friday at 1 p.m. in the championship. The Lynx, which defeated Winfield Mount Union in Wednesday's other semifinal, handed the defenders their only loss of the season. "We're so blessed to be here," Marquette coach Isaac Sturm said. "We have a chance to be at the top, and to be the best, you've got to beat the best. North Lynn has been that for so many years in a row. Hopefully we can knock them off, but we know it's going to be a battle." Spencer Roeder had 18 points and 12 rebounds. Steele added 13 points, and Jacob Litterer had 10 points for Marquette, which looked much more like itself after escaping the quarterfinals despite a rough shooting effort. Caden Kettman and Eli Scott had 9 points each to round out a balanced attack. Lance Helming had a team-high 16 points for Lake Mills. Aiden Stensrud contributed 14, Eli Menke had 12, and Jackson Gall added 11 for the Bulldogs, which bowed out at 25-2. Lake Mills finished the game at an even 50% from the floor. Marquette shot 22 for 54, and the difference, the defenders knocked down 8 of 15 three-point attempts. "We knew it was going to be a tough battle," Steele said. "Every one of these at state is going to be a tough game, but we just know how to fight. We'll battle all the way." Marquette trailed 16-12 after the first quarter and fell into an 8-point deficit at 6 minutes and 48 seconds of the second quarter. That's when the offense started to kick into gear. Kettman scored 4 points, Litterer and Roeder knocked down 3s, and the defenders trailed just by 1 at half. Kettman's basket at 6 minutes and 17 seconds of the third brought the defenders even at 39-39 for the first time since the opening quarter. Roeder and Steele followed back-to-back threes to give a 45-39 lead. It was just the second lead change of the game. Marquette led 53-47 after three quarters and maintained it until Lake Mills capped off an 8-0 run to tie it back at 57-57 with a minute 21 to play. The Bulldogs had one final opportunity following Steele's go-ahead jumper, but Gall's half-court heave rattled off the rim and out. Now for the local calendar. Today's events are Girls Prep Indoor Track and Field, Dubuque Hempstead, Dubuque Senior, Dubuque Wallard, Western Dubuque, at University of Dubuque at 4 p.m., and Men's College Lacrosse, Northland at Clark at 4 p.m. And on the air today, in Women's College Basketball, Illinois versus Maryland at 11:30 a.m. on BTN. To Be Determined, TBD versus Nebraska at 2 p.m. on BTN. Northern Iowa at Indiana State at 5 p.m. on ESPN+. Wisconsin versus Penn State at 5:30 p.m. on BTN. Drake at Evansville at 6 p.m. on ESPN2. And TBD versus Michigan at 8 p.m. on BTN. In Major League Baseball spring training, Braves at Red Sox, 12:05 p.m. on ESPN. Brewers at the White Sox at 2:05 p.m. on NBCSCHI. Cubs at Reds, 7:05 p.m. at MARQ. In the PGA Tour Golf, Arnold Palmer Invitational at 1 p.m. on the Golf Channel. In NHL Hockey, Blues at the Devils at 6 p.m. on ESPN. And Wild at Coyotes at 8 p.m. on BSWI. In Men's College Basketball, Rutgers at Wisconsin, 6 p.m. on FS1. And radio is WPVL AM 1590. UAB at Temple at 6 p.m. on ESPN2. Washington at Washington State at 8 p.m. on FS1. Colorado at Oregon at 8 p.m. on ESPN2. Arizona at UCLA at 8:30 p.m. ESPN. Arizona State at USC at 10 p.m. FS1, and California at Stanford, 10 p.m. on ESPN2. In NBA basketball, Heat at the Mavericks, 6:30 p.m. on TNT, and the Bulls at the Warriors at 9 p.m. on NBC SCHI. Now we turn to the Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, Emily Wiegman from Cuba City. Emily Finds Grove by Shannon Mum. Emily Wiegman continues to shine during the postseason for the Cuba City girls basketball team. The Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week scored 22 points off the bench while tying the school record of 6 3-pointers in leading the Cubans to a 67-52 victory over Neillsville in a Wisconsin Division IV sectional title. "I struggle with my shot during the regular season sometimes, and I don't know what happened, but once we got to the tournament, they just started falling for me," the junior guard said. "It's been a really fun postseason for our team." With the win over Neillsville, Cubans earned their first trip to the state tournament since 2015. "That's been our goal all season, and we are also excited about getting to play at state," she said. "We are a tight group of girls, and we've been playing together for so long, it just makes it extra special." Wiegman is more than accepting her role as the Cuban sixth player. "We only have 9 girls, so I know we are all going to get a lot of playing time," she said. "I just want to be able to do whatever I need for our team. If that's coming off the bench and knocking down a big shot, I'm okay with that." Wiegman's contributions to the defensive end have also been notable. "She's one of the girls we use to slow down our opponent's best players, and I think she enjoys that role," Cuba City coach Jason Derby said. "She continues to get better and better, and she has the ability to do a lot of things well for us." After seeing a good deal of playing time last season, Wiegman's role has continued to increase for the Cubans this season. "She started a few games for us last year, but she is accepting of whatever we need from her," Derby said. "She is the lowest of low-maintenance kids. She never complains, and she is so easy to cheer for. It speaks volumes about Emily's character, with how excited her teammates were for her after every shot she made on Saturday. Yet, she is the other girl's biggest fan, too." Wiegman said the work she has put in during the off-season has been paying off for her, especially during the tournament. "I try to get a lot of shots in during the off season and go to as many open gyms as I can," she said. "I don't think I'd be hitting these shots if I didn't put in that extra work." Now turning to boys prep basketball, Ankeny 60, Dubuque Senior 47 in the Iowa Class 4A state quarterfinals, titled "Senior Fights to the End" by Danny Miller, Dateline Des Moines. The second half magic didn't make its way to Des Moines, scrapping and clawing to mount a similar rally that catapulted it into the state tournament. The Dubuque senior boys basketball team never could find a sustained scoring run over 32 minutes of catch-up, as fifth-seeded Ankeny ousted the fourth-seeded Rams 60-47 in an Iowa Class 4A quarterfinal on Wednesday at Wells Fargo Arena. Senior trailed from the opening tip, was never able to draw even, but also never let the Hawks too far out of striking distance. With 2 minutes and 42 seconds remaining, the Rams trailed 53-45, but ultimately could never close the gap. "This group's middle name is Team," senior coach Wendell Imers said. "They're all about team, and they are a strong group. We fought, we just didn't play our best basketball today. If you don't play your best basketball at the state tournament, you get beat." 12th graders Jacob Williams and Nick Kennedy paced senior 21-3 with 14 and 12 points, respectively. Williams, the Mississippi Valley Conference Mississippi Division Player of the Year, added 11 rebounds to finish his Rams career with a double-double. "It will always feel good to be a Ram," said Williams, who will play for the University of Dubuque next year. "I'm excited for my next 4 years of basketball." Ankeny advanced to Thursday's semifinal round against top-ranked Cedar Rapids Kennedy. Carson Johnson, the leading scorer in 4A this season, had a game-high 26 points. Cash Schoolin had 10 points, and Luke Anderson 9 for the Hawks. Senior trailed 15 to 10 after one quarter and got to within 15 to 14 early in the second quarter after back-to-back baskets by Williams and Kennedy before the Hawks immediately responded with 11 and 4 run. "We started off kind of slow, not hitting our shots, and they were hitting theirs," Williams said. "That really hindered our ability to get back in it." Ankeny held a 29-20 lead at the break. The Hawks opened up a 12-point lead early in the third, but Kennedy knocked down a three and added a drive to the hoop to twice cut the deficit to 7. "I just saw that we were down and that we needed something," Kennedy said. "I was just doing everything possible to try and provide that for my team." It was as close as the Rams could get, though. Ankeny shot 51.2% for the game, including an even 50% in the second half, while the Rams were desperately searching for consecutive scoring stops. Senior finished the game 18 for 43 from the field. "I really thought Ankeny had a great game plan against us, and they played really well," Imer said. "We got the offense going a little better in the second half, but we just couldn't get the stops that we needed." Sophomore Tevin Schultz's layup with 2 minutes and 42 seconds left in the game brought the Rams within 8, but proved to be too little too late. "Pretty much the first day we started, our goal was to get to state and bring home a conference championship," Schultz said. "We did both, and so it's a lot to be proud of." The run in Des Moines may have ended prematurely, but the season's success as a whole won't soon be forgotten. Senior capped a season-long stay inside the IHSAA top 10 rankings at number 6 in Iowa's largest class. The Rams won the MVC Mississippi Division, etched their 7th trip to Des Moines, and cemented their 3rd 20-win season under Imer's reign. "It was fun every day, every single practice," Kennedy said. "Some people probably don't look forward to coming to practice. I looked forward to it every day and battling with these guys. 20-win season, conference champs, state qualifier. We gave it our all." And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.